I tagged along to her swim team tryouts, and naturally, the younger sister, I snuck a swimsuit in my bag, and I ended up trying out at the last minute, and I made the team and she didn't. So,
really?
Yeah. Wow. So I always attribute my, like, the spark of my swimming career to that moment.
Ivy, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, sweet. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the Roommate Conversation podcast with Aditya and Ben. Both of us are currently rising juniors at Emory University and have started this podcast with the main objective of unlocking the authentic student experience through discussions of various topics. Today, I'm extremely excited to introduce an old friend of mine who went to my high school and was actually my neighbor during our high school period, Ivy Richter. And as usual, before I introduce her, let's hit it with the intro music. Thanks, Alex, for making the theme song.
Thanks, Alex. Let's start this podcast with a few introductions. So, Ivy, do you want to talk about where you're from, where you go to school, what your major is, how you know Addy?
Yeah, so I am originally from the U.S. I grew up for 8 years on the East Coast, and then I moved to Hong Kong in 2008 and lived there for 10 years, so spent most of my life there, and I went to Hong Kong International School, and that's where I met Aditya. We were neighbors, actually, for a few years, which was really fun. And then I go to Miami University of Ohio, where I study journalism and fashion corporate business.
So I know you have a sister and a brother. Are they both situated with you during this quarantine period?
Yeah, so it's actually been super weird. So when I graduated high school, my family moved back to the States, and now they live in Rhode Island. And so when school shut down, I came to Rhode Island. My sister was here, and my brother lives and works in Boston. So he drove down. And so for the first time since 2013, we were all living together as a family. And it was really, really weird. There was definitely a lot of mixed emotions, a little chaotic, but it was pretty nice. We were watching, we did like a James Bond marathon for like 30 nights. We watched every single James Bond. And we were all working from home and doing schoolwork virtually. So there was a lot going on, but it was pretty fun. Also a little messy, but it's been nice overall.
What's the situation like now? Are you guys still together or?
Yeah, so it's kind of, my sister goes to school in Worcester, Massachusetts, which is like an hour and a half away. And so she's kind of going back and forth now. And then my brother is, like I said, he's in Boston. So he was with us until like mid-May. And then just about like a month ago, he moved back. And now he just comes down occasionally on the weekends. And he brings his girlfriend, so that's definitely really fun. But so I'm currently the only one that's actually living here fully for the next few weeks. And then my siblings are just kind of back and forth.
Yeah, that's nice. So one of the things that actually connects us, apart from the fact that we were neighbors at one point, was that we both grew up in Hong Kong, and we actually both moved away from Hong Kong. So I was wondering, for that, how is it moving away and how has living abroad been for you?
Yeah, leaving Hong Kong was really, really difficult. I just felt like when I got to the US, no one really understood my background. They didn't understand that me saying I'm from Hong Kong was actually that's where I consider home. And so for the first few months at school, when people asked me where I was from, I would panic. Like, I'd break out in sweats and just get really, really nervous about this very basic question. And then overall, I just kind of adjusted to saying, oh, I'm from Massachusetts, which is a total lie because I am very disconnected from that part of my life. But I eventually got around to saying I'm from Rhode Island. So it definitely took a lot of adjusting to accommodate for the conceptions of people in the U.S. for how they understand expat lifestyles. It's definitely, I go to school in the cornfields of Ohio, so there's not a lot of people that have had the same experiences as me, and so it can be confusing, and then it definitely is just confusing for me because of my identity, whether I'm American, whether I'm from Hong Kong and all that. So moving away was definitely hard, but I'm so appreciative of my global experience. I would not change it for the world. Growing up in Hong Kong allowed me to travel the world. I have friends from so many different countries. I've grown up in such a globally diverse and inclusive environment that I feel like it's really made me who I am today and really advanced me in my studies and my interests, and so I'm really thankful for it.
Yeah, that's really interesting because that's something that we've discussed on actually multiple podcasts so far. I'm curious, when you talked about how you started saying that you were from Massachusetts, was that because people sort of reacted to you saying you were from Hong Kong in a strange way, or you just felt more comfortable telling people you were from Massachusetts?
Yeah, I would say I'm from Hong Kong, and they would look at me with giant eyes and just so confused. Like, they had no idea what to say to that. And I got a lot of different responses. Some people were like, oh, cool. Okay, anyways. And then I got some responses that of people were actually generally interested. But to me, I felt like it kind of created this barrier between me and like advancing with getting to meet new people. A lot of the people around me grew up in similar, either in the same state, in neighboring towns, had this Midwestern connection. And so I felt like it just kind of created this wall between me where the only people I could really connect with were another international student. Thankfully, one of my best friends from school, she's from Austria. So she kind of experienced the same thing with me, except she's a native of Austria and is only going to university to swim. And so it was still this different situation where it just kind of made more sense to say Massachusetts. But then I met some people from Massachusetts and they asked me what town I'm from and asked me all these questions if I knew this person, what high school I went to. And I grew up in Wellesley, so I could kind of make up a little story, but then it just made a little bit more sense to say I'm from Rhode Island, which allowed me to kind of accept that now Rhode Island is where I'm living. I used to just come here for the summers, but so it was just this like 4-month transition to saying, okay, Rhode Island is the safe answer, the one that makes the most sense now.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, and Addie, I feel like we sort of had a similar situation with me coming from the US and you being from Hong Kong. Do you think that was a barrier for us at first?
Oh, it was a definite barrier. I don't know if you remember, Ben, like we, I don't think I talked to you that much for the first few months because I thought we didn't have that much in similarity apart from like maybe our love for sports. But I gravitated towards mostly Asian friends. And I was lucky compared to Ivy in that sense that there are a greater international student presence on Emory campus compared to, I'm guessing, where you're studying. So in terms of that, it was a little bit easier. But what's funny is that over time, it got to a point where, like, telling my background or where I'm from, actually, yeah, I got raised eyebrows and everything for when I say I'm from Hong Kong. But it's much more difficult that way because I can't say I'm from the U.S. at all. I just take it as, like, it's a good conversation starter instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it opens up sometimes when I'm itching for a conversation to keep going. I just kind of like weave it in there because it is interesting and it takes people back. It's definitely a little bit of a shock. So, yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of recently, I've seen like on Instagram, you've been posting a lot about the Black Lives Matter protest and you've related it a lot to your experience in living in Hong Kong and living abroad. So I was wondering, how has Hong Kong defined you, especially when you're discussing something political or ethnical or economical in terms of that type of discussion within the US?
Yeah, so initially I kind of always perceived myself to be very globally minded, very inclusive. And I never thought that I would be put into this category of being perceived racist because my comments, I wasn't voicing my opinions. And so when this Black Lives Matter protest really erupted, this is probably the first time I've been in the US now 2 years. And so I've started to kind of gain, like, put myself in a position where I'm following a little bit more about politics or the economics happening. But growing up in Hong Kong, it really kind of shielded me from the tensions in the US. I looked at the US from such a bird's eye view, so many different points. So I really got to see the faults of the US. And so it kind of created this troubling relationship where I just really didn't understand the country, a country that is supposed to be my home, where I'm from. And so when the protest started, I felt really ashamed that I hadn't voiced my opinions louder. I've always stood true to my opinions. I have always been in support of the Black Lives Matter movement, but I felt like I didn't do it justice by standing up for what is right. I was never really in a situation in Hong Kong where I could stand up and say, stop being racist or whatnot. I just, that didn't happen to me a lot. And I'm very thankful for that because I think that goes to show, like, HKS in my standpoint, in my viewpoint, was a very inclusive and diverse community. But as I kind of was reading more articles about how the international expat lifestyle kind of shielded people from seeing the full side of a country. So even in Hong Kong, I live in Hong Kong, I love the country, I consider it home, but when it comes down to the umbrella revolution or any political protests happening there, I'm shielded from that because it doesn't necessarily include me, because I am an expat. I have the right to move back to my home country whenever I want. And so I think that kind of felt the same way with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I didn't really notice it until just these past few weeks. So I've been trying to share my opinions, read as much as I can. I've been reading books, reading a lot of articles, getting a really full viewpoint on the situation, and just educating myself on a lot of the struggles that are happening in the US, because I just wasn't living in the US to understand these apart from just textbooks. So I'm trying to make up for that and just really educate myself, make sure I'm sharing my opinions when it matters, and using my social media as a way to get the message out and all that. So.
That's fantastic, yeah, because being informed, I think, is just one of the most critical things. I think we have a lot of problems due to misinformation and people just being ignorant. So good for you for really trying to educate yourself. I want to ask you about how you think these protests relate to the Hong Kong protests, because I assume you're pretty familiar with those two. So just as someone who's from Hong Kong, do you see some similarities between the two?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you can even just compare two photos of police being aggressive towards peaceful protesters, and you'll see that the power force from police officers and government officials, they're oppressing the voice of the population. And I see that in the US, and I see that in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a little bit more complicated because of Hong Kong's history and its relation with China. That definitely has a little bit more of just a different situation. But in terms of what's happening in regards to protests, I definitely think there's similarities. It's really scary seeing the protest protection guides comparing Hong Kong protesters with tear gas masks and all that, because that just really brings it to life. And I feel like I'm caught in these two worlds where I've seen everything unfold in Hong Kong and now I'm seeing it unfold in the US, but both times I was kind of shielded from them. In Hong Kong, I was living on the south side of the island, which is kind of protected from a lot of the things happening in the city. So there could be a 2 million people protest, peaceful protest, and you just don't know about it because you're on the other side of the island, which is really crazy. And that's how I feel in Rhode Island right now, because while we have had a Black Lives Matter protest and a march, very peaceful, amazing event, it's just so different from a lot of the other things happening in the rest of the country. But I do see a lot of similarities, and yeah.
Yeah, completely agree. I think, I see a lot of comparisons, and you've hit on most of them. And it's sad, especially in Malaysia. I'm sitting here and I'm unable to do too much apart from post on Instagram. And that's another thing that we can talk a little bit more about, like maybe in another podcast or something, that like the social media presence during this protest has been magnanimous, you know, and it's been so important in fighting in both protests or whatever.
Yeah. Feels like we might be having a moment here. Hopefully something can happen.
I definitely don't think you can't fully compare them, because at the end of the day they are very different. What people are protesting across the world, mostly in the U.S. and in Hong Kong, they are different. But I think when it comes down to police brutality towards these protesters, towards the peaceful marches, that's where there is similarity. That's where you kind of see this oppressive force from the people in power, the police officers and whatnot. So
yeah.
So one of the reasons why we wanted you to one of the main reasons why we wanted you to join our podcast was not to talk about the protest, but more about your experience in D1 swimming and what got you into the sport, what got you interested.
Yeah, so I started swimming when I was 8. Shortly after I moved to Hong Kong, my sister, who is 2 years older, but just a grade older, we both wanted to take up a new sport. So we had been doing Sunday soccer and all that in the US, and I wanted to become a gymnast and she wanted to become a swimmer. So we were gonna do our own thing. And a few weeks after we got to Hong Kong, there was a swim team tryout for the Hong Kong Island Stingrays. And they train out of Hong Kong International School, so the school that I ended up going to. And I tagged along to her swim team tryouts, and naturally, the younger sister, I snuck a swimsuit in my bag, and I ended up trying out at the last minute, and I made the team and she didn't. So, So I always attribute my, like, the spark of my swimming career to that moment, because so competitive in nature, but as siblings we're even more competitive. So with that happening, I was like, yeah, okay, maybe this sport I have a future in, or maybe I'll stick with it, give it a shot. And then it just kind of went from there. I ended up loving it. One of my best, like, first friends in Hong Kong swam with me. I met a bunch of best friends through swimming as well, and it just gave me a sense of belonging. I was in this new country. I actually went to a British school for my first year in Hong Kong. So my siblings were at one school, and then I was at a different school. But swimming kind of gave me that into the HKS lifestyle. And then eventually a year after, I transferred over. And then so when I did transfer schools, I already knew a few people. And then the sport just kind of went from there.
Great.
Nice.
So when you started swimming for HKIS, what was that like? Was it more very intense and focused on recruitment and competitions, or was it more of just like a fun activity with friends and stuff?
Yeah, so at first, I was so young, it definitely was just something that was fun. But throughout the years, we had a lot of transitions with head coaches, and what was really fun about the program was that, so the difference is I swam with HKIS kind of throughout my time in Hong Kong, but Hong Kong Island Stingrays, my swim club, and the school were different, but everyone that was on, that swam for the swim club basically went to HKIS. And so that was a unique situation in itself, that there weren't really split swim team and club team practices. But for the club, it was, you got to like move up through the ranks. And so a while back it was like Stinger A, Stinger B, then like Junior A, Junior B, and then you get to like platinum and a gold level, whatever it was called. And so you, it was fun. You got to watch yourself move up. There was competition with, I mean, me and my sister, when she did eventually get onto the team and had a great career, but we like competed with each other to like move up in the ranks. And then me and my close friends that I swam with, we'd move up together, and there'd be like little like award ceremonies. So it started out as something very like fun. I didn't really think of it going to the level it did until I was about 10, and that's kind of when my swimming career blew up and definitely became more of a competitive nature. And that's when my long-term coach started at Stingrays and as an HKIS school coach. And so that's kind of when it went from there.
Nice. Well, I had a couple of friends in the swim team as well during HKIS. And what was really fascinating for me was that compared to basketball, I mean, like, it's not a team sport, yet I found that the swim team was so close and connected, and that I think a lot of your best friends were still, are still the swim team members. So what did the swim team mean to you?
Yeah, so the sport itself, it was, like you said, it's an individual sport, but it's also a team sport. The points that you bring to the team, and then there's relays, and then there's individual awards and team awards. So, but the sport to me, the actual sport was just, I felt free. I would dive into the water, and it was just like an escape. Whatever I was stressed out about, it was my 2-hour escape into my own head, kind of thing. And so it felt great. I loved the way it made me feel mentally and physically. But just as a team, it's such a bonding sport, because you are at the pool at 5 a.m. and then you're at the pool again until like 7 p.m. that same day. And so you see someone's personality at their lowest lows and their highest highs, when they are getting yelled at by their coach. And then when me as a swimmer would be yelling back and getting kicked out of practice, to then achieving your best time and winning a gold medal. So your teammates saw such a different side of you that you don't really see outside of the sport. And I think that really bonded us as a team. And what was so special is it was such a small group of people. Throughout the years, when I was younger, the team was larger than this, but there was 30 people that were kind of in this group that were kind of at the competitive level. And as I got older, people either stopped swimming, they went to boarding school, they left Hong Kong. And so the pool got smaller, but the people that had stuck around for the same amount of time that I was there really bonded us together. We just became so close. And so it was really special.
That's awesome. So you ended up swimming for a D1 school. So do you want to talk a little about the recruitment process and sort of how that went with finding a college to swim for?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to swim Division I when I was 12, and I had my eyes set on UCLA. Early. My parents both graduated from there, and so I wanted to get to that high level. And the recruitment process for swimming, now it starts earlier, but for when I was being recruited, it's kind of started end of junior year of high school. So that's when I was reaching out to coaches from about January onwards. And then so I did all of my college visits the summer before senior year. And so I saw 15 schools that summer, and I had at every school, I had a meeting lined up with a coach, and I had been doing some Skype calls with coaches throughout the spring semester of junior year. And what was really unique about my recruiting process was that for one part, I was looking at schools all over the US. I wasn't tied to a specific region because I wanted a really unique experience. I looked a little bit on West Coast, but I was really drawn to the South, and then a little bit in the Midwest, and then the Northeast. So I was all over the place. But what was really different was I had a great season my junior year, and then a month after a highlight meet in April, I got mono. So I was just out for the count. I couldn't swim for about 2.5 months. I was sleeping all the time. I literally looked like a blowfish. My glands and cheeks and eyes were so swollen. So when I went to go meet all these coaches, I was so nervous because I wasn't able to compete that summer. So I thought I honestly thought my dreams were kind of crushed. I thought because I wasn't going to have any new times past April that they wouldn't want to recruit me. And then the recovery process was going to take a little while for me to get back in shape. But I ended up lucking out because every coach I talked to was so thankful that I had mono, because they just, when you get mono during the season, during the swim season college, then it takes you out. Then you risk having other swimmers getting taken out, and it messes up the whole collegiate season for you. And so they were thankful that I had already had it, that I wouldn't be at risk of it in college. And then so, yeah, I went around to 15 schools. My mom was a huge help. She does freelance college counseling. So she basically showed me a lot of these schools that I hadn't heard of, that I didn't look into before. And it was just a really fun summer. Definitely stressful because coaches may not have been as interested in me as I would have hoped, or there were just a lot of ups and downs. But at the end of the summer, I was pursuing very, very highly four schools that were all over the US, and three of those schools offered me offers. One of those schools probably would have offered me something. I just kind of didn't wait around because I didn't really see myself fitting in there as well. But it was really exciting that kind of after this whirlwind career and then the crazy summer of mono and traveling all over the US, I got my dream from three schools that I loved, and I would have been happy at any of them, but Miami was definitely the one. I walked on that campus and I was really excited, so.
That's wonderful. That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was competition much different when you entered D1? Was training much different compared to high school, or was high school a good preparation for you?
Yeah, high school was definitely a good preparation. My swim coach was very tough. He didn't take any slacking around, and he really built up my endurance levels and just my mental stamina to overcome any barriers and whatnot. But swimming in college was very different. They my program divided us by your level. So if you were a distance swimmer, a mid-distance, or sprint, and I'm sprint, so in high school I'd be doing a lot of like sprint and then endurance type workouts. It was such a mix. On top of that, I'd also be like running and lifting. But in college, I was basically just doing sprints. So I was gaining a lot of muscle and doing a lot of heavy lifting and doing a lot of fast sprint work, which was just so different from what I was used to. But it was really fun. I loved the team. I actually stopped swimming in November. So I swam for about a year and a half. And then, but they're still my closest friends at school. It was just such a different training experience, but you definitely had the opportunity to really work closely with the coach that was designated to that section, you could call it. And so my sprint coach was really, really influential in my collegiate career. And it was really fun. It was high energy. There were a lot more races than in Hong Kong, because in Hong Kong there are a lot of local meets, but for some of the other like bigger high standing meets, we'd have to fly out of the country to go to those ones. So it was nice that kind of every week there would be either we'd be traveling, or there'd be a meet at our pool. So definitely high energy, really competitive environment, and everyone was just really passionate about swimming, so it was great.
That's great. I guess the big question for me is why you decided to quit. Because at least the way that you've talked about swimming tonight, you seem to really enjoy it. So why?
Yeah, it was definitely a long time coming. I still to this day love the sport, but I had for years been struggling with various injuries. I had a lot of different shoulder and back problems, and so throughout my swimming career I was kind of always dealing with something. It was never a practice. There was never really a practice where it was just focusing on swimming and getting through the practice, making the times or whatever. There was always, okay, how's my shoulder today? Am I gonna be able to finish this lap? Am I gonna have to get out and stretch or whatnot? So that was definitely a struggle. It weighed on me, not only physically, but really mentally. And that really hit me my sophomore year, where I decided to take off the summer. I was working in Hong Kong the summer before my sophomore year. I didn't really swim much, but I did some other workouts to try and not get too out of shape. But when I got back to school, I shocked myself because I was swimming really well and I was really excited. And I had been debating for a little while about maybe this isn't what I want to do in college. There's other opportunities to pursue. And so it'd been on my mind, but I just hit that like high where I was doing well. I made my first travel meet. And so that all was great until I got another injury. And this one had been a reoccurring one since my senior year of high school, but it just hit a lot harder. And beyond it just being frustrating that I'd have to get out of the pool and I have to sit on the pool deck and watch my teammates swim, I couldn't really deal with it anymore. And so I kind of hit a breaking point where I wasn't sure if I wanted to move forward with it. So it was a combination of me realizing that there's so much to do in college, and I think my interest had kind of faded from spending 20 hours a week swimming and lifting weights to the injuries always being such a setback that I didn't feel like it was worth my time. And physically, I just think my body had had enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. Injuries are really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope the injuries aren't still affecting you like in your regular life.
Yeah, I've definitely outgrown a lot of them and just kind of moved on. I know what types of workouts or exercises agitate my body. And so, I've been able to compensate for not swimming with just like running and doing other types of workouts like yoga or whatnot, and just making sure that I'm stretching and doing the exercises that I've been doing so long just to, keep my shoulders strong or my back strong or whatnot. So, I'm not really impacted them the same way as I was when I was competing and training 20 hours a week.
That's awesome. Yeah.
In terms of like now that you've left the swim team, do you miss that routine? What are you going to take from your swimming experience for the future?
Yeah, I really, really miss the routine. I just miss not having to think about when I'm going to work out and having such a set structure to my day. It's ingrained in who I am and how I function to have early morning swimming at 5 or 6 a.m. And so it's definitely been weird not having that and having the chance to sleep in. Like, that was just such a foreign concept to me. And so I'm really excited to try and find new ways to stay motivated, have a schedule. I sometimes just write down my goals for the week in terms of working out and just like plan it all out, because if I don't do that, then I might try and cut corners or like change things around last minute. And so that's something I definitely will really miss and always be a part of me, is just having such a strict schedule and keeping myself motivated physically. And then I also in the future really want to find people that I can work out with, because that's something I loved about swimming, as it's so individual, but at the same time, there's always teammates around you. And when you swim up to the wall, like there's people next to you and you can chat and whatnot. So I miss having people to just hang out with in that sense. And so that's something that I hope to find in the future, whether it be like with kickboxing classes or yoga classes or whatnot. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess just to wrap up, do you have any plans for college going forward for the summer? How is the pandemic going to affect that?
Yeah, so the pandemic, like all college students, definitely impacted our semesters, and then a lot of internships were canceled, including mine. I was supposed to be doing a study abroad internship in Milan this summer, so I would have been studying, interning in fashion in Milan, which would have been so insanely cool, but...
That sucks.
I know that that is an opportunity. I can travel to Milan hopefully some other time in the future, but so this summer I'm just doing a remote internship based out of San Francisco, because in the fall I will be going, there's a program as part of my university, it's called Digital Innovations, and so it's basically my minor, and so for that program I will be living and working in San Francisco for 4 months with about 15 other Miami students, and it's a really cool experience. I'm really excited. It's a lot of, you work 4 days a week, and then you network on the after work and on the Fridays. So I'm really excited to just live in a new city, be in a city again. It's going to be very different from living in Oxford, the college town. But I'm really excited because it'll just allow me to have a new routine, kind of get back to trying something new. And so that's what I have planned forward for this upcoming semester. And then I'm excited to be back in Oxford for school come 2021.
That's amazing. Do you have any plans of visiting Hong Kong anytime soon?
So I was there in the summer of 2019, so just last summer, and I definitely want to go within the next year. My family's been talking about going over Christmas, but because of the pandemic, kind of unsure as to whether there will be travel restrictions at that point.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't be ideal because we don't have a place to live to be quarantined in a hotel for 2 weeks. So we're going to take it day by day. But the goal is to go and visit during post-Christmas and like kind of into New Year's for 2021. So hopefully that happens.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ivy, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Hopefully that was fun.
Yeah, this was very fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So, thank you.
All right, peace.
Bye.